You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com. Hello and welcome to Absent Minded. My name is Jared Buck. Joining me today, we have Patrick Bexell and Matt Drake. We'll get to them in just a bit. The last of the major pro sports leagues are off and running, and college basketball is ready to go as well. Bet Online remains your top spot for all your live betting action and contests. NFL, college football, UFC, and NHL are all in full swing. Bet Online is your number one source for wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions. All the hoops betting action, along with every sport available at your fingertips, with both desktop and mobile access at any time. Head to Bet Online today and remember to use our promo code BELEAV, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. And where the podcast starts is over in Switzerland, as there was news on Saturday that the team in Kloten, where David Reinbacher is playing, has fired their coach, a coach that the Canadians in part sent him there to play under. But as we know, these things can change. It's not the first time that this has happened, because it happened a few years ago with Jesperi Kotkaniemi's father as well. Obviously, he was in Montreal at the time. But like you said to us yesterday, Patrick, and we'll start with you, you don't send a player there just because of the coach, because there's a chance he can get fired.
Yeah, no, of course. Let's focus first and foremost on Gary Fleming, and you know, he has that connection to Montreal and everyone else. And the fact is, like, what is his coaching career? He's been assistant coach at Eisbären Berlin, which is a good team. Then he went to the ECHL for the Iowa Heartlanders. I don't know his record there. And then he played for the Lions of Frankfurt, or Leuven in German, in DEL, where he finished top eight. And let's just, you know, go with some facts here. The DEL, the German league, is not a very good league in Europe. So going into arguably the second best league in Europe at the moment with a team that is, you know, they're there to stay up. And you start the season this way. And in some ways, the Friday's game was totally, you know, it just spoke of Kloten's season. They were 1-0 up, they were 2-0 up, I think, and then they came back to 2-2 on a Nathan Beliu mistake in the last minutes before the goalie in overtime is trying to send the puck away, hits the forward on the arm, and the forward can poke it in overtime, obviously losing at that point. Kloten is second to last in the standings, and they lost on Saturday again. And obviously, directly after the game, Fleming was fired. Kloten has stated that due to the risk of not reaching the club's declared goals, the management is of the opinion that this current situation, new impulses are needed. And Larry Mitchell and the GM will take over as coach along with the other coaching team, which is Saku Mertekainen, Kimmo Rintanen, and Tim Berche. So, you know, the same team will be there. They will just need another voice or a new voice. They might add to this team later on. But I think, let's face it, Reinbacher is probably the best defender that Kloten has. It's not going to impact his ice time. It's, on the contrary, you might get used more on the power play and more on the box play.
Yeah, it's you know, you can say it might be likely that his injury is what led to their slow start, which is what led to them having to sign Nathan Beaulieu to shore up their defense, which a lot of Canadians fans are probably laughing at, like I am a little bit. And then it's all kind of connected. But yeah, I don't think that this affects Nathan Beaulieu. I don't think it
Well, it's
affects
not going to
him.
have it affect his development either.
No,
It might
it's
affect Nathan Beaulieu, but
yeah, exactly. I don't think it's going to affect David Reinbacher's development. Obviously, they need him as much as he needs to play. So, yeah, I don't think it's going to affect it that much. And just to answer your question, you said you didn't know what his record was. His last 4 seasons as a head coach in North America, out of playoffs, out of playoffs, out of playoffs, out of playoffs. So those were his last 3 years in the AHL, which, by the way, one of his assistant coaches was a Laval Rocket head coach, Jean-François Houle. And his last year in the ECHL, sorry. So
Yeah, and I,
it's been a while.
you know, it speaks volumes. In some ways, you have to wonder why do they bring him in?
Right. You could say that about a lot of coaches, even in North America, when people have losing records and people magically think that they can get better.
But to go
So,
back,
yeah.
you have to be with a relegation system that is in Europe.
Right.
You have to be. You have to understand that you just don't send him over because they're going to keep him until the end of the season and then fire him. You can fire two, three coaches during the season here.
Right. If the NHL had a relegation system, Martin St-Louis would already be fired. Let's be honest. Right? The Montreal Canadiens would not deal with being in the bottom five for 2 years in a row. But obviously, yeah, it's a little bit of a different system in North
And you
America.
know, you would never have the chance that Babcock have to play. Build up a team from scratch in a
Right.
way.
Right. Yeah,
So
you're
you don't have that security. I mean, it's a tough job in NHL, but it's usually for the mid-tier teams. The top teams are going very well. The mid-tier teams, are you making the playoffs or not? We're firing you. The bottom teams, yeah, we can keep you around for another couple of months. We might get a better draft pick.
right, exactly. It goes to show, right? The team that changed their coach, the NHL, the first team to do it, Edmonton. Well, not counting Columbus because that was a whole different situation. But Edmonton, right? They have high expectations. They expect to go on, and the teams that are at the bottom, they expect to lose. There's no real disincentive for losing, like there is in the relegation system. So yeah, obviously, big news. But it's always a big story when that happens, especially giving Fleming's connections to Montreal. And there's a lot of stories written about that in Montreal media. But like you said, that David Reinbacher, they need David Reinbacher as much as David Reinbacher needs to play. I don't expect a big change, at least a negative change in the way that he's gonna go forward, because like you mentioned, same
And
system, same teams.
before I sign off here because I have to write the EPR, I need to tell correct myself that Frankfurt Lions finished 10th in the DEL last year.
Instead
So
of eighth.
yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. Great. Thank you for that
Yeah, well,
update,
eight would probably have been like half the table, but this
Patrick.
is they're the lower end.
Right.
All
Patrick,
right,
thank you so much
thank
for
you
your
guys.
insight. Yeah, th thanks for your
Yeah,
insight.
cheers.
We knew that we had to have you to talk about it because you do a lot better job than we would. Right. I think Matt would agree with that. So thank you for that, Matt. We'll bring you in now. How are you doing?
I'm doing terrific. I kind of wish I didn't watch that game last night, but aside from that, terrific.
I did not watch most of it either because I was on Laval Rocket duty, which was not much of a better game, to be
Lucky
completely
you.
honest.
Wow.
Well,
Yeah.
everything's relative. At least they scored 3 times. Although I think Montreal scored twice. It was 5-2 in the end, the
Got two
final.
goals,
Yeah,
so.
2 goals. So it was close enough.
You know, you could argue maybe they didn't deserve two goals, but they
Yeah,
got him.
Slavkovsky played well. That's he got 2 points, which
He did. And you know, I felt like that was, you know, that was what I wrote about in the bottom six article. I talked about it a little bit on the podcast as well. Like I think there's a sense of impending doom among the fan base right now with the way things have gone lately. And I feel like, you know, sometimes when we get into a funk like this with the Habs losing a lot of games, people can't see the forest for the trees, you know? That was a pretty decent game from Slafkovský. His underlying numbers weren't great, but whose were on the team? So, realistically, I liked to see the additional shooting confidence coming from him, which has been coming up over the last couple of games, really. I don't know if whatever they were doing with the shooter tutor at practice actually paid off a little bit for him. Certainly didn't for Josh Anderson, but for Juraj Slafkovský, it seems like he's taking a step forward in that regard. So I liked it. And he did get his goal away from his actual regular line. It was like during a line change, and he kind of stayed on the ice, and he was out there with Newhook and Suzuki put a really nice saucer pass to him coming out from Gretzky's office behind the net. So look, was it a perfect game? Should we be sitting here singing his praises to the stars? No. But it was a pretty good game, and I think I'm seeing positive progress from him. So I think as fans, that's something that we can at least latch onto and say, hey, you know, as bad as the team's been recently, we have that. And I think that's probably worth more to the team to have him progressing positively than wins right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's interesting because, so much has been said about, Josh Anderson's struggles and things like that. And that might be hurting the team's results right now, but in the long run, doesn't really matter, right? When this team is ready to compete, Josh Anderson will very likely not be a major part of it if he's a part of it at all. And I think that's the thing. Like, there were, they had a good start. They were in like a playoff kind of like bubble position, which I think nobody really, I think, rational expected them to be there all year. There were always going to be these peaks and valleys, especially after Kirby Dach went down. Because I think one of the major issues with this team right now is that they don't have a number three center who can become a number two center when needed. And they tried Newhook there. It didn't work out. They've tried Monahan there. It's had mixed results. He's kind of gotten cold lately. That line with Pearson and Gallagher has kind of been separated. At least it was on Saturday. And, Christian Dvorak had some time there as well. And I think that, Jake Evans is kind of the, not like the fourth line kind of mainstay. And I don't think that Monahan and Dvorak are bad players. I just think they aren't capable of playing that second line role, getting, expecting 60 points on them, especially when the Canadians don't really have the wingers to compensate for it. And that second line has had some combination of Pearson, Slafkovský, Newhook, Anderson, Gallagher, right? That's kind of been the kind of trios they've been putting out there. They had Ylänen out there. I see Ylänen out there on Saturday, and you don't want to judge things based on one game, obviously, especially against a team as good as the Bruins are. Let's be real, but or at least better than the Canadians. But I think that there's so much demanded on that center that it makes things difficult because the wingers can't really compensate, and it's kind of a mix, a mismatch. And I think that what we're seeing is that they don't really have a distinct style of play, and they're kind of figuring out things on the fly because they can't really make many changes. You're kind of stuck with the guys that are in the NHL right now, unless you really want to do something, really drastic, like put someone on waivers or, and I don't think they want to do that, mainly because there's no real need to or rush to. But there are some options in Laval a little bit, and one that you're pretty fond of.
I think everybody knows where you're going with that. It's Joshua Roy. I mean, he's been playing fantastic since the beginning of the season at Laval. I've watched more Rocket games than I normally would early in a season because I got somebody down there that I'm really rooting for. And I've been super impressed with everything that he's done. Now, I understand a lot of people, and none of you are wrong when you're saying, hey, let's hold off, let's let the kid cook in Laval. There's nothing wrong with that at all, and I'm not necessarily disagreeing with that sentiment. What I am saying is the next call up, the next time that somebody goes down in the forward group and they need a body, it's got to be him. I don't want to hear anything about Yoel Armia. I don't want to hear Elias Anderson. I know he's hurt right now anyway, so he wouldn't be an option for them. But I don't want to hear about anybody else. That's the guy that I want to see them give him a taste. I think he's earned it. And I get people want to let him, you know, dominate in the AHL a little bit. But I think for the future of this team, it's not beneficial for us to see a 4 or 5 game Yoel Armia stint. We know what he is. We know what he can do. And as much as they might like to showcase him a little bit and try to get a trade, let's face it, that contract is a problem that they're unfortunately going to have to probably deal with via a buyout or something else in the off season, because I don't see another team taking that on mid-year for them. I would rather see Joshua. I'd rather bring him up and only do it if you're willing to give him a top six spot and give him a really good look. I don't know, for 4 or 5 games, however long you happen to need somebody for the next injury. I think, again, like I said, when it came to Juraj Slafkovský, are we really worried about wins right now? No, we're not. What we are worried about is positive progress from some of those young players that figure to be a part of the core once this team is ready to compete. And he's one of those guys. So I think he's done enough to earn a call up. The question is when. And for me, the answer is whenever the next time they need a body.
Yeah, I think that's a key point, because you don't want to bring him up and, you know, send down or waive Josh Anderson or, you know, anything kind of really drastic like that, because if he's not able to stay there, you want to have that flexibility, right? And you don't want to, and you know, let's face it, Laval is short on forwards, Trois-Rivières is short on forwards. Like there's quickly becoming an issue with health, which always happens. I mean, you know, you can go back to our podcast at the beginning of the year and we're like, how is Laval going to fit all these players in? Well, guess what? They're short players now. They needed players from the ECHL, which always happens. It always happens. And so, yeah, I don't think you want to leave yourself short organizationally, but I think, yeah, if you need a body, that's kind of the direction you'd go in, especially given, you know, Elias Anderson is out now 6 to 8 weeks. You know, there's not that instant guy you can bring up. You know, there is Armia, but I think that, you know, he can stay in Laval for a bit. I think that they need that kind of presence as well. I think that helps them. And Hua has been much better than I expected. You know, they had a really rough stretch, 5 games in 7 days. And I thought last game on Saturday in Utica was his worst game that I've seen him play. Mm. And it's normal, right? Like young guys, especially coming from junior where you play like, you know, twice, maybe 3 times a week, you going to 5 games in 7 days is rough. And they started the week in Manitoba, played a couple of games in Laval, and then took a bus to Utica. Like that's not an easy week. That, you know, it's a very AHL week. Not typical, but it's a week that can happen. You know, it's not the 3-3 and with travel that you see sometimes, but it's almost in some cases just as bad. But yeah, I think that he's, you know, he's shown what he needs to show, and I think he's definitely on the short list for when they need a body. But I wouldn't rush things and make changes just for the sake of changes, because, you know, like you alluded to, wins don't really matter, right? Like they don't need an instant result. You know, we're what, 15 or so games into the season? Like So I mean, it's
panic time.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a great story. You know, when they're winning, it's great. When they're losing, people want to be like, okay, make some changes. But let's face it, like we knew,
yeah,
you knew this season was not going to be easy. You know, let's put it that way. And and you know, the lows have been really low. Like when the Canadians have a bad game, it's a really bad game, right? Like there's no in between. And I think that that's what makes it harder to watch them, right? Because you know they're capable of better. So when they perform badly, it's like, okay, like this is bad. Like what are we doing here? So I think it's a little bit rough. And we mentioned the injuries in Laval as well. Like it's rough out there. It's tough out there right now.
It's funny that you mentioned Hawaii having a bad game against Utica also, because I had people in my mentions, like I was doing the Habs game, so I wasn't watching it, but I had people popping into my mentions being like, oh, he's having a bad game. And it's like, I don't understand this desire to dump on young players right now from the fan base. There's a lot of fans out there that are just, they're just itching to get something negative out about a prospect. And to some of those people, you know, if you're listening and you watch that Utica game and you're going, what's going on with Joshua Hua? Did you watch the night before where he should have had 2 assists?
he got robbed by the refs of a second assist, looked fantastic out there. And like, I just don't get how the next night has a bad game and all of a sudden you go, okay, well, that's indicative of the player that he is. Like, as you mentioned, the schedule has been pretty rough lately. I think he's one of those few players coming up from junior where the schedule isn't going to impact him as much as it might others, because he's got that pro size, because he's, you know, 6 foot tall and he's about 200 pounds. He's, you know, he's got the body of a man already at 20 years old and he's still got room to grow as well. But it's still not going to be zero impact coming from junior into a schedule like that against men. There's going to be games where it's going to be less than ideal from him. And, you know, he got one out of the way and hopefully he's back to his old tricks in the next game. So I'm not worried about him. And again, next injury in the Habs, that's the name I want to hear.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny because, I mean, Laval also missing basically an entire top line, right? Like we mentioned, yeah. Anderson, who's been out for a little while, Mitchell Stevens left Friday's game, as did Philippe Maillet. They were all out on Saturday, and it's kind of like, okay, well, like basically the Laval lineup was like the third line became the fourth line became a third line. The fourth line was essentially guys who were in Trois-Rivières the night before. And
yeah.
And the top two lines were just kind of like guys who were, you know, middle six guys who are now like, okay, you're top six guys now, have fun. Like it's not ideal. And
That's,
you know,
imagine that you lose two forwards. They lost two forwards in the previous game at the beginning of the second period also. So they played basically two periods with 10 forwards. And then, like you said, got on a bus, went to Utica and played the next night. Come on, man, that could be an NHL team. And they're still going to probably have a rough night on game number two.
Right. And not to mention those two guys you lost were top players and you replaced them with ECHL players, right? Like, it's not like you're replacing
who else guys played the night before, didn't they?
Yes, they also played. They traveled separately. So, like, you had Voyer and Yaremko who were called up on basically Saturday morning. I guess, you know, they probably knew, had a good feeling that they would need the bodies because they knew that Stevens and Maillet weren't going to play. So, yeah, you had them take a separate travel. I don't think they got a bus just for the two of them. Maybe they drove up, maybe they drove up themselves. Who knows?
Got a maneuver.
Yeah, well, that happened once, right? Literally, last year at one point, they had to stop the Trois-Rivières bus before they got to the border at a gas station, tell somebody to get off, pick him up in an Uber, and drive him back to Laval. That's the minor league sometimes. When that happens, and yeah, like, you know, there's a lot of people who are just expecting the worst, and we've mentioned this before on the podcast, like. It development is, you know, it only looks bad. You only notice it when it's bad, right? No one says, oh yeah, this development path is super great. Like everyone, they're doing a great job with this development. Like, nobody says that. It's only notice it when it's bad. And I think that development has been so bad for so long in this organization that whenever something seems to go wrong, people expect that to be the new norm, right? So when Slafkovský struggled a little bit, that's the new norm. And then he ends up playing better and improves. And he has since then. Joshua White, he has a bad game. People are like, oh, is this the new normal? Is he gone cold now? Was that just a hot streak? And people expect, and I understand the feeling. I understand where that comes from. It comes from your past experience. Like, I understand it. But we have to also look big picture that things are different now. And there's different people in charge and different players as well, right? Because the players are not blameless in this either when it comes to development. And, you know, I think that that's important as well. So, yeah, but I mean, you know, you look at the previous six, the previous four games of that 5-7 stretch, and Joshua Waugh and Sean Farrell were probably the two best players on the ice most of the time. And, you know, one bad game and again, he I'm not saying he was great on Saturday. He was not, but there's circumstances here. Like, let's calm down a bit. Everyone's, you know, if you play 78 great games in the AHL, it's impossible because you'll probably get called up before then, right? Like, that's just the reality of the situation.
You're not lasting.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody plays 78 great games in the AHL because, you know, you get called up more likely than not. So. But it's nothing to worry about. But it's the reason we're bringing it up is because, you know, I do think he's an option for the NHL as opposed to just rotating in veterans like they have been. And yeah. I understand that as well, right? Like, I understand why they recall Gustav Lindstrom instead of looking at a guy like Jaden Struble or Mayu or Norlander or, you know, Trudeau. I understand why you don't want to throw somebody into the Wolves necessarily. And that's why they called up Armia as well. But I think that as we get deeper into the season, that's something that you look at doing. You know, both teams are going on road trips coming up. So, you know, I don't think there'll be any major changes anytime soon unless no. You know, unless it's needed for injuries and stuff like that. But
plus it's the dreaded California road trip. Yeah. Which we know, the California road trip, the first one they do every season, it's shit.
And the funny part is like it was understandable like 5-10 years ago when all three teams were good, but San Jose and Anaheim kind of suck now, right? And it's still bad.
I said that on the bottom six last night. Actually, I was like, you know, this is probably their best chance in the last, I guess, 10 years where they could maybe go into California and have a 3-game set and actually go 2-1. I think the Kings game is going to be a rough one.
Yes.
But, you know, who knows? The Habs have shown that they're and they're capable somehow of getting up for some of those games against much better teams. Yes. We've seen them. We've seen the Jekyll and Hyde effect already twice. We had game one against Vegas. Fantastic. Game two against Vegas. Brutal. Game one against Boston. Fantastic. Game two against Boston. Brutal. So you don't know which version of the team is going to show up, but you go into every game going, well, I know they're capable of surprising the shit out of me against this team. And, you know, you kind of just let the chips fall where they may.
And that's what makes the bad performances so frustrating, I think, for fans.
Yeah.
Is that you've seen the good. So why are they so bad? And you can, you know, you mentioned the two games against Vegas and Boston. You could also throw in the game against Arizona, the game against Calgary, where they decidedly played down to their opponents, as opposed to, you know, getting up for them. And you know, I don't want to say they played down to them, but they weren't at the level that they were in the good games. I think that's, you know, that's important to look at as well. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it helps that the San Jose game is in the afternoon too. So, you know, if there is some, you know, jet lag, that's kind of more on their schedule than it would be normally. And it's better for us too, because we don't have to stay up till 1 o'clock in the morning to watch it.
Well, we do for the Wednesday game.
Yeah, no, there are some, but at least it's not three, right? Like that was the whole thing. Is like the third part of that road trip was St. Louis, which was a 7 o'clock start. So it wasn't as bad as when they go all together and they, you know, all you know, four or five games in a row at 10 or 10:30 Eastern. Obviously you're an hour ahead of that, so it's even worse for you. But it's gonna be interesting. But
I won't be this time. Actually, I'm gonna be in Montreal for the whole trip, which is weird. The Habs aren't actually there, so I don't get to see a game. But I'm gonna be on the South Shore for the whole thing. So
well, there you go. So you get to save an hour. It's better for you as well. But let's face it, you know, a lot of this podcast is like yelling and stuff. But I think that if you're looking for people yelling and screaming for change, I'm sorry we disappointed you in this episode. But I think that, you know, it is what it is, right? Like I understand the frustration. I'm not saying to deal with it and be quiet about it, but at the same time, what are you really going to do? You're going to fire Martin St. Louis? No, it's not
going to
happen.
I mean, they could at least deal with this ménage à trois that they've got going on in the net. I think that's maybe something that fans that we should be looking at a little bit harder than some of the young players and, you know, dumping on their performances, because I really don't think that this can continue very long. I don't think it's good for Kim Primo. I don't think it's good for Jake Allen's trade value. I don't think it's good for Semyon Montembeau's trade value or for his development as well. We got to keep in mind, he's still a pretty young goaltender that could potentially be an answer for them moving forward. I think that's really, for me, I know a lot of people are probably screaming hearing me say this, because yes, there are issues with the actual lineup on defensive forward, and their defensive zone coverage is bad, but they appear to have three pretty capable goalies. And right now there's not enough work to go around for three capable goalies. They need to move one of them. So it's kind of like shit or get off the pot time, where Kent, need you to start making some deals here. There are teams out there that are starving for goaltenders. Looking at you, Edmonton. Now, of course, they're cap strapped, so it's going to be tough to make a deal happen with them. But there are teams out there that are starving for goaltenders. I don't see how this, three goalie system can last much longer. And, if we're talking about change, that's one thing that I would probably advocate before anything else is deal with that, because I'd really like to see them, get back down to two goaltenders, and you can have a 1A, 1B and split the games right down the middle if you want, but at least everybody's getting work. Right now, you've got one guy in the press box every night, no matter what. And not only is that guy not going to be getting an opportunity to maybe get into the net if things get out of hand or anything, but he's up there eating hot dogs in the press box. I just don't see how this is beneficial to them. I think they need to make a move there.
Yeah, and my thinking on that, people are saying, oh, which goalie do you trade? Which goalie I would trade? The one that gets you the most return. I don't care.
Yep.
If it's Montembeau, you trade Montembeau and you deal with it. I think that you don't play around with it. That's what I would do. I would just trade the one that gets you the most return, whether it's Montembeau, Primo, Allen, I don't really care. And, you figure stuff out afterwards. Because I don't think either one of those guys is going to be like a 1A that you lean on. You're going to need to get another goalie anyway. Might as well get the most return and figure it out. And I'm sure some teams are probably lowballing them. They're not the only team with three goalies, right? Detroit, who Montreal just played a little while ago, they have three goalies as well. Like there are teams that have the depth that they're kind of like storing and hoarding a little bit. But I think that's kind of the name of the game, is it becomes a waiting game. And, at least they're rotating Primo in. Like, I was scared they would just like not let him play at all. So at least they're rotating him in. I like to see that. So, but yeah, it's not ideal for anybody involved. I think they get that done. Matt, thank you so much for taking the time. Obviously, thanks to Patrick, who joined us in the first part. If you skipped it or I don't know why I would say you joined in late. You kind of you can pick where you start this thing. But yeah, if you didn't pay attention to that section, go back and listen to it. But thank you so much for listening. This episode has been brought to you by Bet Online, and we'll see you next time on Haps and Minded.